Hello and welcome to the F24 podcast. My name is David and each week I'll be having creatives of all sorts come over to my studio in North Acton to talk about their lives and interactions with London culture and creativity. This is F24. This week's chat is with Ed Tizer. Ed is a London culture animal and you've probably seen him everywhere and at everything. I met him in 96 on the 31 bus route where he was sitting on the back of the bus and asked me if I wrote. We've been mates ever since. Here's his London culture and creativity story. You can check his work out at TizerID on Instagram whilst you're listening. And we recorded this in March 2018.
There was a guy who was going around doing, you know, when Hiroshima happened, the only things that were left in the cities were the shadows of people who were incinerated, basically. So, like, he was doing these kind of shadows on the walls.
And
they were like, kind of ban the bomb stuff.
Chapter 1, London. As always, we start right at the beginning. Ed brings us back to the late 70s in the US, and we hear about his early years there and his move to South London in the early 80s. He fills us in what the streets were like in South London, fivepence bus journeys, punk, skinheads, and his introduction to music. Easy, Ed, mate. Thanks for coming, man. So let's start at the beginning. Where are you from?
I'm originally from Omaha, Nebraska, right in the middle of America. My mum, she wanted to produce television.
Okay.
And in the 60s, there weren't any female producers in England. So she moved to Chicago.
So she's English?
Yeah.
Okay,
and my
cool.
dad was American. So
she moved to Chicago?
Yeah. And then she started her own TV show out there, which was like a, it was just kind of like a talk show. She was able to have like people like the Byrds and different bands like that on her show. And my parents.
So that's what she got to do, what she wanted to do. She
got
to be a female producer in that industry in the 60s.
So that was really kind of important for her kind of growth and stuff like that. And that's around that time was when she met my dad. And they were really against the Vietnam War. And both of them were, I found later on, were both of my parents were Black Panthers.
Amazing.
And they were best friends with a guy called Fred Hampton, who's the leader of the Black Panther in Chicago in the 60s. And the police shot him in his bed, and he was 21 years old. Because I was always told that it was a pro-black movement. That's not the case. After my mum told me, was that it was a pro-people move. We're trying to help the poor and the unfortunate people of America.
Yeah, who weren't getting any help.
Yeah.
So your mum and dad met. They were obviously on the same type of vibe.
Yeah.
And
I think more kind of, I mean, I know my dad was political, but I think it was more my mum who was like trying to, was pushing it. I bet he was fully involved
on board,
as well.
Yeah.
So
then you were born in Nebraska? You've got a brother?
My brother, Shucks, was born in Chicago. And then my dad at the time was an illustrator. And he wasn't getting enough work when my mum fell pregnant with me. Mm-hmm. So my grandparents on the American side, my grandfather had a electricity company.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite successful, and that he was like, why don't you move to Nebraska and I'll give you a job and get you paid properly.
Yeah.
You know? So my parents moved to Nebraska, and unfortunately my dad became a violent alcoholic, and we had to leave. So
you were born in Nebraska, and how long were you there for?
I was there till I was 7 and my brother was 9.
And so I'm wondering, I might be off here, but I wonder if he was an illustrator and a creative guy, and then obviously, I don't know this man, illustrator, creative guy, and then he's obviously got the understanding of people as well, and the love for people, and then maybe put into a job. That is just a job, and not, a job's a job, it's not just a job, but it's, if you're a creative person.
Yeah, that's a difficult.
I wonder how much that
affected him. Yeah, I probably did, because
I mean, no excuses for your behaviour. You're a man or a woman. You've got to stand up for what you've done and step into and bring into this world.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I wonder.
I could imagine that. I mean, me and my brother used to watch him draw, and we were fascinated by that. And because we didn't live anywhere near friends that we went to school with or family friends. Me and my brother played together a lot, but then we would draw a lot. Just because that was something.
So what were those, like, Nebraska, man? Like, so what, did you have a front yard? And
well, we moved around a lot in Nebraska.
Yeah. So do you remember it?
Yeah, well, I remember every single house because it was really different. Yeah. So, and then when I moved to England, I missed my father so much that I tried to remember every detail
really
that I could.
Fucking kept it in.
Well, when we moved to England, we moved to Sydenham in 82.
Mm.
So that was so different from where we were from that it was, my early childhood memories are quite strong because it was so separate from
and I suppose,
what England was like.
For such a completely different layout of land as well. Like, I've never been to Nebraska, but I can imagine there's a lot of space.
Yeah.
You can see, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is space. And Sydenham hasn't got any space.
No. we lived in
just that one fact.
Yeah,
and there must be a million other things.
I mean, we moved into my aunt and uncle's house with my cousins my eldest cousin was 10 years older than me, and then it was, so he was 17.
And you were 17. So is this mum's family?
Yeah, this is my, so basically my aunt is a famous midwife who started midwifery in this country in the 60s. So, which is illegal in America. So whenever she went to America, she had to pretend that she had a different job because she would have been arrested, which is crazy, isn't it?
It's deep breath, exhale.
Yeah, basically my granny kind of got wind of our situation and sent my aunt to go and stay with us for a month.
Your situation being that, listen, my daughter's not enjoying this marriage with this guy.
Yeah, well,
he's a dick. We need to get him back.
Well, I mean, it was actually, my mother had a conversation with my grandmother, and she was like, "Oh, how's Dennis?" And my mum went, "Oh, he's okay." And that was the first time my mother had ever said anything negative about my dad. So she was like, "You need to go over there and see what's going on."
Right.
And my aunt stayed with us for a month and realised how bad our situation was.
So you've come back to England, and obviously under quite very sad circumstances.
Yeah.
And you've had a bit of a mad time out there in Nebraska. But you said that you watched your dad draw.
Yeah.
So was that a seed of some sort? Did
definitely.
You take that back to England with
you? Yeah, definitely. But like my mother wanted to, when she was younger, she wanted to be an artist. So she went, she tried to get into the university she wanted to, and was refused.
Mm-hmm.
So then she chose a different path. And I think that might have been one of the reasons why my mum dated an illustrator, was because she wanted...
That was the world she loved.
Yeah.
She loved art.
My dad and my mum would take us to like exhibitions, or there used to be like this old 30s cinema that would play black and white films, and they would they'd play silent movies. Mm. So my dad was taking us to see like Buster Keaton films when we were children. And then... They were always trying to show us art and film.
So they were a cultural lot, and they instilled quite a lot into you.
Yeah,
so you're in Sydenham, you're at your auntie's house, you're sharing with 17-year-old cousins,
and
your brother's a bit older than you.
Yeah. And my two younger cousins were punks at the time. So
wicked.
When I was seven, I was, like, before we moved to England, I was into kind of like Hall & Oates and AC/DC and The Police and kind of Blondie and stuff like
that. Home.
Yeah.
Music's definitely something you're going to enjoy.
Yeah.
And those are the first bits
and
you're listening to.
So when we moved to England, my cousins introduced us to like ska and punk and reggae. And then my eldest cousin was into like electro and David Bowie and all that kind of stuff. And
so you got chucked quite a fucking range.
So from the age of seven, like, all of the pop music that was coming out, like Wham and all of those kind of bands, we were like...
Bros.
No, that was way after.
True. Yeah,
but
true.
We were just like, man, this fucking sucks, man. Like, I want to hear something that was like aggressive music.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was because we felt that we were being taught.
And I suppose also, you were seeing stuff that was chucked at you commercially, but you knew through your family that there is reggae and there's ska and there's rock and there's and so a good eye opener. So how old are you by the time you realise art and music are part of what you're going to be
at? My cousin was really into comics, so I think I was pissing him off when I was 7, like really annoying him, and he just threw me this comic.
Mm.
And it was the Fabulous Furious Freak Brothers.
Really?
And you're not supposed to be reading that.
Not at that
7,
age, man, no.
Do you know what I mean? So like, I was like, what's this? It's got like drugs and tits. And, do you know what I mean? I was just like, this is the best shit ever. So like, I've got pictures of me at school when I'm like 8 years old with like Fat Freddy Cat's t-shirts and stuff like that. And I shouldn't be wearing that shit at that time.
That's cool. So is your brother into the same type of stuff as you?
Yeah, fully. Like we...
at the same age, like he's a couple
years
older.
Well, I mean, we were both really into punk, and then my mum's boyfriend gave us one of those kind of like radio Walkmans, the really budget ones.
Yeah. You know, small little radios with the little wire and a headphone, one headphone.
Yeah, with just like the fluffy earphones.
86.
And like, I remember this one night we were both in bed because we were listening to our Walkmans, and then I was secretly listening to a hip-hop radio show, and I like took my earphones off, and I could hear that my brother was listening to the same thing, and I was like, are you into hip-hop? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, right. And then we both realized that we could tell each other that we both started like listening to hip-hop.
So what were you then? 8, 9, 10?
Yeah, eight or nine, yeah, something like that.
And you...
Well, basically, my cousin, his favorite band were The Clash at the time.
Okay.
And Futura came to London and did a piece.
Yep.
And he took us to West London to have a look at it. And he wasn't really into graffiti. He was doing kind of punk-style graffiti.
Yep.
Just doing tags, but not kind of American-style tags, like block letter things.
That was the kind of the first writers were those skinheads and rockers and so on like that. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Roll so like when I first, he showed us that.
Yeah.
And we saw him doing tags and we were like, oh my God, you're drawing on something that's not yours. Whoa.
And you can do that as well. Because you look at a Futura piece and you're like, oh shit. Because that's much more than a tag.
We never really looked at it before then. And then there was this guy in South London who was doing these kind of, I think it's kind of the first type of street art that I would probably say that there was. It was like, there was a guy who was going around doing, you know, when Hiroshima happened, the only things that were left in the cities were the shadows of people who were incinerated, basically. And because of the scare tactics of Russia and America going to war in England, that we were under constant threat of nuclear attack.
Cold War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so people were on high alert and fucking scared.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like he was doing these kind of shadows on the walls and we were like, like kind of ban the bomb stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then so we started looking at kind of tags, and then this one day we were walking to, my cousin used to walk us to school.
Yeah.
And on his estate, we came around the corner and there was a funk piece with a Afro character with ski goggles. Like just the
Stancing.
Face. Just the face.
Okay, yeah,
you know, like
yeah,
the
yeah,
head
yeah.
with the goggles
yeah.
with the kind of...
Yeah.
And we were like, what the fuck? Like that wasn't there yesterday.
Yeah.
And like, I turned around to my cousin. And I was like, oh, what does funk mean? And he was like, I don't know, it's some kind of bullshit soul music. And me and my brother just looked at each other and we were like, but that's the best shit I've ever seen, ever. Do you know what I mean?
So, all right, well, look, before we get in too deep into the graph thing, just... So you start off in Sydenham.
Yeah, and then we moved to kind of Herne Hill, Brixton.
And then you kind of pretty much stayed there then.
Yeah,
I know you to be from Brixton.
Yeah, well, so I stayed there till I was 17 and I got...
Okay, so... from the ages of, so you're in London properly, you're fully acclimatized, you're here, you understand this is going to be my life now, you're 10, 11 years old, and you've been introduced to music, and you've seen this graffiti on the streets of some sorts. And
But at that time, it was so racist.
Oh, yeah. So do you know what I mean? Like, and especially down in Brixton.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but there was like skinheads on the street, and because my cousins were punks, skinheads were trying to attack us. So like from the age of 7, me and my brother were like throwing rocks at skinheads. Wicked. Like racist skinheads, scar boys. No. But and like we were constantly like, you fucking septic cunt. And like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was like, or yank boy. Or
were you travelling mainly around South London?
Yeah, but I mean, this is way before we started getting into doing graffiti. We were looking at it by this point.
Yeah, you know, but so. I want to know what you were seeing. So you're talking about the skinheads and that in the early 80s. By the time you started really roaming the city, you were starting out in South. Do you remember like your first trip across the river?
Yeah, because my mum started working for the film industry really early on when we first moved here. So I remember giving me 5p to get on the bus.
Wicked.
And she was like, you have to sit next to the conductor, and me shitting it like, she was like, you have to tell the conductor that you have to get off at Regent Street. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going into central London. Do you know what I mean? Like,
so you had to go up there and meet her?
Yeah, yeah. But that was like the first time traveled by myself on the bus. And I was young, man. I was like fucking 8 or some shit. But you know, like back then, kids were on the street.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like nowadays...
Now, that'd be a horrifying sight nowadays.
Yeah.
Well, and people would think it's a horrifying sight. Yeah. Listen, man, I put my son on trains from a young age. I wasn't having it. Mm. And buses, they've got to see the city, man.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, like the thing was, is it was... Back then, you knew who the local paedophile was because all the kids were like, oh, it's that fucking pedo. Yeah, exactly. But nowadays, all the kids don't... No. They're all like mollycoddled, so they don't know who the dangerous people are.
So you could be out there. You could be on a bus at 8 years old, 9 years old, and you could walk up to a conductor and say, "Listen, I'm going to see my mum. I need to get off at Regent Street." And he'd be like, "No worries, son. You sit there. I've got you."
Yeah.
If you said that to a bus conductor now, they're probably not allowed.
Yeah.
They could probably say no, but their heart might be massive and think, "I wish I could help. I'm not allowed."
Yeah.
And also you can't sit in a conductor anymore in these buses. Yeah. But that's what London was like. You're right. We were out there.
Yeah.
Kids
so like
out on the street enjoying it.
Yeah. So we were like constantly out. Like, I mean, I was really jealous of friends of mine when I was younger and now looking back at it, I realized like we used to be like, oh, that kid can stay out till it's really late. But I realized that their parents didn't really give a shit about them. And my mum was like, you need to be home at this time.
There was always have to have dinner together. Man,
do you know what I mean? Like she made it so we had to have dinner with her, which I think is really important for a family unit.
You don't get it at that age, but you're right. At that age, you're like, mum, I don't want to come home at 7:30. Like, that's right, prime time. While I'm out, that's prime time. You're bringing me home at 7:30. That's what it's like for me on the estate. And then she was right as well. The kids that'd stay out super late, they'd be really glamorized. Yeah. You as a young kid, like, oh my God, man.
Yeah, but then
Dee's out there, like he can be out there till 11 o'clock and he's fine. And then you realize actually home life isn't all that, man. And you're going home for dinner, which is great. You could probably come back out after and then make sure you get home at a certain time and get into that nice bed and relax. And
It's I don't know. I feel really lucky that I'm the age that I am because I saw a lot of things happen like the kind of birth of things, really. Do you know what I mean? So I was lucky to see like the kind of birth of British hip hop and the birth of British graffiti.
Chapter 2, Culture. I think Ed was made to soak up culture. He seems to take note and learn from a wide array of them, and I'm sure they play a part in his main love, graffiti. He brings us to the South London buses of the 80s, what Brixton and South Bank were like, jumping into skateboarding, and giving himself quotas and tags whilst roaming the city.
I saw a lot of things happen, like the kind of birth of things, really, do you know what I mean? So I was lucky to see like the kind of birth of British hip-hop and the birth of British graffiti. you know, like, and so, we started later on. We started when we, in like 88, 89, when I was like 12, 13, and
but you, it was something you were looking at and taking note of and understanding.
So we were because South London had crazy like wild style tags, much more than kind of West, like West London. Like they, I'm not saying that it was better or worse. You saw, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it was,
yeah.
But South London had a definite kind of unique wild style bus bombing because we didn't have many tube lines.
Yeah.
We had buses and slam doors.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were trying to read script tags and like figuring out, and then realizing that when we went into Central London, that certain guys were in Central London, we were like, oh my God, these people are traveling to do their graffiti. And we were like,
isn't it nuts though, man? I wonder how. Well, it's not similar at all for a South London writer now, because bus bombing isn't a thing.
Mm.
And obviously, not there hasn't been added really tube lines, so there's more overground down there now.
Yeah.
In South. But still,
it was leathered.
Back in, it was a completely, the city was completely different in the 80s and early 90s. And the split was really real. And when I looked into my graffiti history, when I got into graphic, you know, early to mid 90s, and an understanding about the history of South London and its bus bombing, and the fact that I didn't get to see it because I didn't travel down there.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I know about it.
Yeah.
Because there's no, you can't see any remnants of it now. Yeah. It just doesn't happen.
Well, it was crazy because it would stink.
Yeah.
Like the top deck would stink, and you couldn't see through the windows because it was battered. Like even the ceilings were battered. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, we had wicked bus routes on the Kilburn High Road, and I do remember tags on the buses, but nothing like in the photos I've seen. And obviously, I was even too young to really remember proper bus bombing. But
there isn't many photographs, and plus, you know, the thing was is like, I mean, my mum when I was 16 gave me a camera for my birthday, and then I got fucking jacked about 2 weeks later and lost my camera. Do you know what I mean? So I never took photographs of anything.
Yeah.
But even still, like, people, if they were in a crew doing bus bombing, they wouldn't bring out their camera because the kids that they were with were probably rolling, you know what I mean?
And I think also it wasn't, you know, that part of the culture.
It was just part of what you did.
I don't think photos probably weren't a major part. I wonder, when did photography hit the UK scene to be an integral thing that artists need to have? Because
I just always thought everything was always going to be there.
And also, it's just something you did. You didn't, because you didn't think about in 2 years that could be cleaned.
Yeah.
It wasn't, at the time, you're just like, there's my painting.
Yeah. No, but you never really thought it was ever going to be any different.
No.
Do you know what I mean? And it wasn't, I mean, as a kid, I knew that, because it was a single parent family, so we didn't have any fucking money.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, we were broke as fuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that was one of the reasons why me and my brother got into doing graffiti, was because both of us were dyslexic and we couldn't remember rhymes. We couldn't afford decks. Yeah. Like, we had to save up to get a record.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, so we couldn't afford decks. We couldn't rhyme. I used to body pop and beatbox, but those kind of went out of fashion pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, well, we draw, so and it's free. We could like make our own markers, make inks out of shoe dyes and or suede dyes and stuff like that. And then, you know, like people, friends of ours who were proper writers teaching us how to like mix paint and things
so,
like that.
Before we go too deep into culture.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. I'm enjoying it. I'm getting carried away. I want to know a bit about Brixton.
Right.
Because I never got to Brixton. I didn't get to Brixton until maybe, you're going to laugh at me, man, I was probably like 97,
right.
98.
Yeah.
Well, and I was too scared.
Yeah, but it was dangerous.
Yeah, it was dangerous. I was Kilburn was fine. I'm fine up there. Yeah. I did not need to go across the river.
Yeah. But Kilburn was dangerous for us.
It was, but it was my...
but it was your...
It was my Kilburn, so it was fine. It was very hard for me, but still, it was fine.
But even when we were in our neighbourhood, it was dangerous for us. Because
exactly same. Yeah.
Kids... We could never pretend to be tough.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because if we were like chucking it like we were bad, we would just get a punch in the
it'd
mouth.
It'd be over.
Yeah.
Because the real was there, basically. Yeah.
They were like, I mean, what, you think you're a bad man?
Brixton was, I mean, it was the, you know, just a wild place in the stories that went around the city.
Well, I mean, when I was 11, I went down Railton Road and I got beaten the shit out of by 20 kids. Like, I got fucking annihilated.
Just rushed for any reason or?
I had a skateboard.
Okay.
And they wanted my skateboard and I was not giving it up. So, you know, like I was getting punched to the floor, pulled back up. I was booting kids in the balls and nutting them and fucking hitting them with my board and then holding onto my board and they couldn't get it off me. You know what I mean? And it was like, yeah, I got fucked up. But it is what it is.
I mean, that was part of London life as well. Yeah. Street robberies were... It was part of your Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime you're on the bus, you're like, oh no, 14 kids are on the bus.
Listen, man, every Saturday, no matter where you were, you knew. This was 90s for me, early 90s for me, but it's just like, be ready. Right? It was just a part of life. It was part of life. People would chuck it.
You just learn how to run.
Yeah, you learn how to run, you learn how to fight, you learn how to hand over quickly, whatever the deal is. You learn how to negotiate, like leave me a fiver or leave me some quids. Like you take the rest.
No one had a fiver back then.
A fiver, exactly.
Leave me a couple of pence.
I just want to get a chewy. Let me just get a chewy.
But yeah, it was...
So skateboarding though as well then?
Yeah,
so you got into skateboarding?
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a kid in my local neighbourhood who had these like 70s like banana boards, you know, the kind of little plastic boards.
With the points at the ends?
Yeah, yeah. So we used to borrow that off of him and then do like catamarans down the road and stuff like that. And then and we thought that was the shit, you know what I mean? We were like, it can't get better than this, you know. And then when I went to this American school, there was like a few kids from California who were skaters and they knew how to skate. So we were instantly like, oh my God, they're doing crazy tricks.
They're doing
like,
better than we, better than the shit that we're doing down our road. Yeah. Like.
You know, so we were like instantly
hooked
and wanted to be part of that whole thing. So, I mean, like we were hanging out at South Bank from the age of 11 when it was still Cardboard City. So I knew all the tramps by name. I knew who the scary ones were. I knew which ones were gigolos. Do you know what I mean? I knew all their scams. Do you know what I mean? And then you had kids who were skating there who were from all different aspects of life. So you had like poor kids to Bugs Bunny money kids. Do you know what I mean?
South Bank gets brought up a lot. It has been brought up a lot in the conversations we've been having. And
skateboarding was an art form.
It was. But I think it seems to be that was like, it's literally like a crux to the city is South Bank. It was such a vocal point for people through the 80s and 90s. Like such a place to look and learn and figure things out for yourself. What a place for it to...
Yeah.
It kind of like, it just met up there.
Well, it was, in some ways, it was a safe haven for us, even though it wasn't. Do you know what I mean? You'd have fucking crews of kids roll through there trying to rob everybody. And
that's a good point, actually, because London was complete. I mean, I don't know about London on the streets nowadays because I'm 38, but London back then, you couldn't, when you were part of a culture, the streets weren't that safe.
No, they
were. The streets weren't safe anyway, and so you're right. It must have been a safe haven. It was, and that's why people like met up there and got together.
Well, because like all of the reason why I never got into football was because all the football cunts from my neighbourhood wanted to kill us. They were like, "Skaters, kill them!" Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then because we were traveling the city trying to find places to skate, and then because me and my brother also got into graph, and like for a long time I was only interested in tagging. Do you know what I mean? So I was trying to get 60 tags a day, and if I got more, then I had to do less the next day, and if I didn't get 60, I had to...
You set yourself a quota.
Yeah, so I had to do even more the next day to keep up that whole thing. So,
look, that's a fucking nuts first 10 or 12 years, like to, you know, be born out in Nebraska and your brother to be born in Chicago and come to London and being thrown into all these cultures, and then your eyes are super open.
Sorry, I was going to say that when we were on the bus, like, because me and my brother were talking, the only TV shows that were on TV was Dynasty and Dallas. So all the kids were like, "You American." And we were like, yeah. And he was like, "Give me your fucking money." And we were like, "You must be loaded." And we were like, "Well, no, there's poor people in America too. I live in South London." Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, nobody goes to South London.
I wouldn't be in South if I was rich.
But, so you've had these journeys, and your eyes have been open to things, and you obviously became part of certain cultures quite young, man. Like, literally led into them and eyes open to them quite young. And graffiti, is that the main culture you think you took on for the following years? Because I know you still skate in essence.
Well, I mean, I constantly look at it. I mean, I skated pretty much every day for 25 years, and then I started sucking, and I was like, "Fuck this! Yeah. I'll just switch over."
But graffiti was more important. You put more time to it.
Well, I don't know. I think.
Or is it?
It's about the same. I was more into skating when I was younger, and then I was just into tagging for like the first 9 years of me doing graffiti. Tagging. I mean, I did some track sides and whatever, but that was what I was. I just wanted to do tags. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I was such a cheap ass that I would never do tags with spray paint because I was like, I could use that little bit for something good. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, that
was constant.
You know what I mean? So it was just markers. You know what I mean? And I was like, that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to. I would go across London, ring on my friend's doorbell. If he wasn't there, I'd go to my next friend's house, ring on their doorbell, and then hope that I would meet up with them at some point. And like, so I was constantly traveling
around the city.
Either I was skating, or I was just on the tube or on the bus.
And bombing as well.
And tagging. You know what
because
I mean?
Because you were doing that, and your eyes were open to graffiti. And
So I was literally, you could probably follow me from my house to my friends' houses.
Yeah.
Like, because I just...
From those tags.
Yeah, I just tag all the way and back. You know
I met
mean?
You on a bus.
Yeah, I know.
On the you were at the back of the bus. You were in the very back. Yeah. I was one seat in front of you.
Do you write? I was like, yeah.
Yeah. I just knew it, man. You're in the back of the bus in the corner. You must be a fucking writer. You have a rude boy or a writer. I'm going to try a writer.
Definitely wasn't a rude boy. I mean, like, I would have liked to have thought I was, but I really wasn't. After getting a kicking by 20 kids, I was pretty paranoid.
You kind of learn your place, man. I mean, I went through that fucking shit. And I put some weight on my shoulders and thinking I was a certain type of person until I went through it a few many times, actually, before I actually fully realised. So graffiti, we'll take that because I know you as, well, as I said, I met you on those buses many, many years ago. It was mid-90s. I think we were in Chalk Farm. Might have been on the 31 bus. I remember it clearly. And for me, it was a fucking pleasure. I can't remember if you knew who I was. But
of course. I remember you went arm Taz and I was like, I've seen your shit. Yeah, because I've always...
You were Tiz to me at that time. Yeah. T-I-Z-E.
Yeah, or T-I-S-E.
Or T-I-S-E. Yeah, exactly. So when you said that to me, I was like, oh, shit. And then I realised I was like, also got your name a lot from my mutual friend, Hoare, who was my first teacher.
Right.
SHK. Damien.
I was the fourth member of SHK.
Wicked. I was probably one of the last. But
but then later on, at one point there was like 150 people in SHK.
Mate, that crew
it was a big
fucking
crew.
Nuts.
I was just like, I remember meeting some kid and him giving me shit. And he was like, what crew are you in? And I was like, SHK. And he was like, I'm in SHK. And I'm like, I don't even fucking know who you are. And you're trying to give me shit. We're in the same crew.
So
you know? Crazy.
So good. Robbie, really funny. Robbie came also recently.
I went to school with Robbie.
Oh, did you?
That's how he was one of my first teachers because he was like, because I was trying to do joined up tags and he was like, nah, man, you need to fucking just separate your letters until you get good at that shit. Like, he really taught me how to
flow.
Do. Yeah, he taught, because he was already in TKS. And that was, he was like a year below me at school, but he was already a proper writer. Do you know what I mean? Like,
literally, that dude was a G.
He lived next door to...
He lived next door to Yen. Yeah. That's it. Rest in peace, brother. So I met Hoare, who introduced me, who told me about you, but he introduced me to Robbie, and Robbie lived literally from my estate to his house was like a 3-minute walk.
Yeah.
Just all I had to do was cross the high road.
Well, because I've the first thing that I ever saw of yours was in that park in Kilburn that, you know, it had like, it was like diet pieces in this like weird little park, and you had a Daz in that park.
Oh my God. Well, I've got that up in there, and diet was in there. I was so happy. I was so happy. So anyway, yeah, Hoare was my first teacher, and I'd visit Hoare every Saturday. But Robbie, I ended up building up a really good relationship with him, and I'd go around to his house in the evenings, and I'd sit with him, and he literally fucking blessed me with the Bible, man. He taught me so much.
Yeah, me too.
He was so knowledgeable, and he taught Jan an awful lot as well.
Well, yeah, because the first time I met Jan was, he was mad young. I don't even know how young he was, because I remember him cycling up to me, skidding sideways and going, "What do you write?" And because I was with Robbie, and I was like, "Ties," and he went, "SHK," and then cycled off. And yes. I was like, "Oh, who's that?" And he was like, "Oh, that's Jan. He's my next door neighbor. I'm like, he's fully into graph." And, you know,
Jan,
what a beautiful man.
Absolutely
really cool,
amazing,
cool guy.
Beautiful guy. So, graffiti's the thing. Tagging. You're living a London life, working. What jobs are you getting? I mean, how are you making your money?
Because
by now, you're out of your house by 17.
Yeah, well, I got thrown out.
You got thrown out of the house.
But I started working when I was 8.
Okay, yeah.
Right, because I wanted cool shit, and my mum was like, "I can't afford that shit. You have to get a job."
Yeah.
And I was like, so I first started off with like local paper rounds.
Yeah,
then it was like door to door washing people's cars. Yeah. Then we were like, we'll do your garden.
Yeah.
And then I started working, like when I was 10, I started working in a restaurant. I was the dishwasher. I was getting paid 10 quid for 6 hours.
Nice. But how were you surviving when you left home? So what happened? So you're out there doing graffiti.
Yeah.
You're definitely part of that culture.
Yeah.
You're skating. You've traveled the city. You know it fully.
Yeah. So
did you think at that time, right, I've got this culture behind me. I love it. I've been at it for years. I fully understand youth culture. I understand the people. You've learned a lot about the people and the people's voice for your parents and the cultures you've become part of.
But I didn't really think about it.
No, that's what I'm saying.
It was just a thing.
Yeah, so that was a thing. That was just you. But you're now out in the open world and you're having to survive. And then are you thinking about your future? Are you thinking, my culture is what's going to bring me through? Or are you thinking, I'm going to be like every other person in our city. I'm going to hope, well, not every other person has their love for culture. But I'm going to keep my love for culture and I'm going to earn money. And I'm going to...
At the time I got chucked out of home, I was doing a BTEC in graphic design at LCP, which is now LCC, Elephant and Castle. And that's where, well, I mean, me and my brother, we were kind of, because we were really toy and we didn't really want people to know that we were doing graffiti. Like, the only people that we knew who were really cool to us was Asia. And my brother met Asia and Charp at a
boat VFL
party.
Boys, West London Kings.
And then, and they were really nice to us. Mm. And then later on, I met like Rosa and Mint and Shun, and they were really safe to us. And by this point, my brother had moved to New York to go to university, and so he was doing graffiti
in New
with his friends in New York. Right? So. He knew a kid called Drotch, who was the kind of go-to person for like the whole of PFB when they went to New York. He would take them to Queens Yards and stuff like that. So he was really knowledgeable. And he also went to college with a guy called Omni from XTC and stuff like that. But like he knew them, but they weren't hugely close or whatever. But...
So his connects in New York. That's what he's rolled in.
So he was being properly schooled on graph. So like when he came back, he had like a Queensbridge tag style. Do you know what I mean? And when I went to college, I met a kid who wrote horror who was in MTS.
Yeah.
And then a guy who was writing Shore who ended up in DDS.
Yeah.
And then there was a guy who wrote Gem. He was kind of slowing down at that point, but then In my class was Disco, Bobby Disc.
Bobby Disc.
Yeah, so he was like 24 when I was 17. Okay. So, and he knew what he was talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like his Hall of Fame was Crouch End.
Yeah.
And like no one else was allowed to paint there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That was his spot. Man. You know. So
I knew that law before I got there.
Yeah.
And that was it would even that didn't even run out by the time I got there, but it was
but then
graffiti law.
It's because I made friends with some of these people, and then at one point I kind of fell out with a couple of dudes, mm-hmm. and it didn't go that well. So then I went back to not telling anybody that I wrote. So when I met graffiti writers, they'd be like, "Oh, do you write?" I'd be like, "Nah, no. Man, I just like it. What do you write?" Because I look at it, yeah. I'm not into it.
So you kind of the years you'd put in bombing. Put you in a position to end up meeting others and, you know, being down with other people. You go through a few dramas with people and you're like, I've been hurt a few times here. Well, I've been hurt generally by people. I'm just going to take a step back. I'm going to hold my culture, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut a bit.
Yeah, yeah. I just didn't tell anybody.
So your brother's still out in New York?
Yeah, he was out in New York. Yeah. And then he moved to LA 2 weeks after the LA riots,
mm-hmm.
which was not the best idea. Yeah. It really wasn't very cool being
white
in LA at that point. Yeah. And I came and I went out and stayed with him like 2 weeks maybe a couple of months after he kind of settled down there, and I stayed with him for a month and so you know I was pretty lucky for the fact that I just kind of I would work and then save up money and try to do stuff, but skateboarding gave me confidence because my friends were stoked on things when I would do tricks.
Part of it, yeah, in of that course, sense as well. And especially then, skateboarding compared to graffiti.
Yeah, but then same with graffiti because even my friends who didn't do graffiti, they knew my tag and they'd be like, "Oh, I saw you there," and I'd be like, "Yes." Wicked. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
and that's it. Does and, notch by notch, man. Yeah. It's a confidence builder
for sure. And like, because I had no confidence, you know what I mean, and it was, it's difficult being human.
The growing up in the household, you know, that had a spirit of the Black Panther, and, you know, I know there was much more that your mum did. Your mum was there at the day the wall came down in Berlin, wasn't she?
Yeah.
I mean, so you had all this mad energy in you, which is brilliantly inspiring. And like, you know, friends of ours have had political households, whatever, it's the same thing. But you saw...
Well, I mean, I was going to peace marches from a baby.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
So you had that instilled in you, but you also... You saw real life, and no matter what you went through as well, you still had empathy for people.
Yeah.
And I think that something that people really love about you, Ed, is that your good friends know we need to be there for you, or they need to be there for you. But they also, or everyone knows that you're there for them. You are so, like, you're a star in our culture.
Oh, thanks.
You really are a star in our culture. There is no one who can... I don't even think there's a league you can be put into for the character you are in our culture. You're integral.
Right? And thanks, man.
You know, for the last 10 years, 11 years that I've been back in this city, I think the city would be kind of different if you weren't in it, man. If you didn't do and play your part. And I don't mean to push you up on this pedestal, but... I can think of certain things that wouldn't happen, and the butterfly effect of things that you did and the way you are as a person, the butterfly effect that comes off that, things would be slightly different.
Yeah, well, and I mean, that's why me and my brother stopped a lot of wars in this city, you know what I mean? Like, and people don't ever really talk about that. And
you stopped a lot of wars.
We stopped mad crew beefs.
But
your
crew have been... some of the most inventive artists to come out of the city and have stayed so true to that crew. And obviously a couple of people have come and gone. That's part of crew life.
Yeah.
But you and your brother started this, one of London's best crews, and if not best crew in the league of getting these walls done to and styles. And
yeah, well, I mean, like...
You made levels happen, and that's why. That's why. And you're not just... And apart from the fact that the amount of moves you did in graffiti, it's... The most famous thing about you, Ed, isn't just your painting. It's you.
Thanks.
Within the culture, it's you.
Chapter 3, Creativity. Ed tells us about working life in London and being sacked by having good friends and housemates with advice about moving forward. He tells us about setting up business with his brother and also doing the largest illegal piece in London at the time, which led on to commission work. And we also talk about the importance of culture whilst dealing with life issues and the help it provides.
So look, let's move forward a bit, right? We're in, so say for the last 10 years, you decided...
Well, when I was 28, I basically was working in bullshit jobs constantly. Like, so I was doing retail, I was like, where I was working in fucking... in like warehouses or in fucking factories, just menial shit paid jobs. And basically I was talking to my friend, a guy called Ossian Ward, who I went to primary school with, and he was my first kind of graffiti partner, but he's now become like the young kind of He's like a really famous art historian.
Oh wow!
So, like, we grew up together, and I was sitting at his house when I was like 28, and I was looking through Time Out, and I was just like, "Man, look at this fucking illustration. It's shit. It's like not even funny, and it's terribly drawn. You know what I mean?" And he just turned around to me, and he was like, "You need to shut the fuck up." And I was like, "What?" And he was like, look, he got really angry at me. He was like, look, man, he was like, that motherfucker went out there, he got that job, and he's getting paid. He was like, I don't want to fucking see you in 30 years' time going, I could have been this, I could have been that. He was like, just fucking do it. If you failed, then you can say I tried. If you don't, I don't want to fucking hear it anymore. He was like, I just hear you just moaning. Yeah. He was like, fucking do it, man. And I was just like, Oh shit.
So like, you said it now.
Me and my brother were working for a clothing company called Maharishi at the time, and I was working there for a year, got fired, and we were both living with a friend of mine in Fulham at the time, and she was just like, fucking go on the Dole. And I was like, I've never been on the Dole. I don't want to go on the fucking Dole. It's a trap. And she was like, yeah, but then you can sit there and figure out what you want to do. Do you know what I mean? Like,
mate, it's,
she was like, I don't care. Like, the government will pay me the rent that you owe me.
Yeah.
So we went on the Dole for a little bit, and then we started doing painting and decorating, and we got kind of good at that. And then we painted the outside of Camberwell bus garage on the front doors, which I think at that time was the biggest illegal mural in London. And it was on the fucking high street. Do you know what I mean? Like, we did it during the day. It took us 3 days. Yeah. The first day we motioned it, we were like, oh shit. That, and then the second day we sketched it up, and then we were just blasting it in. It's like, there's one point I turned around, because it's on the main fucking road. Like, I turned around and there was traffic jam, and there was a meat wagon with like about 10 coppers all staring at me, painting this fucking thing. And I looked at them, I was like, oh shit, and carried on painting like that. And then I turned around and they'd fucked off. They were like, oh, he's obviously supposed it's to be
too
there.
Big to be fucking illegal.
Do you know what I mean? It was just like, what?
Had they just shut it down?
Yeah, well, there's two bus garages in Camberwell, and they closed down. They were parking buses on one side, and then the side that we painted, there was some burnt out cars, and then there was like some fly tipping in there, kind of.
Right, yeah.
So it was fucked. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
their forecourt.
Yeah.
That was it. The forecourt was fucked, wasn't it? Yeah.
And my mum wrote us, like, me and my brother went into Lambeth Council, and we stole some headed paper, and my mum wrote this like boog fucking thing going, oh yeah, so totally allowed to paint here in case we got fucking nabbed. And then at this point my mum quit her job and became an artist. Yeah, so while we were doing that, some guy walked up to us, and he looked like an undercover police officer. And he was like, oh, can I talk to you guys? So we like came down the ladder, and he was like, oh, how much are you getting paid for this? And my brother was like, £17.50 an hour. Like, because he was like, if I tell him 20, he won't believe me. Yeah. So I'm just going to say 1750.
Yeah.
And we were like, why do you ask? And he was like, oh, I've got some tags on my shutters and I want the Indian monkey god on the front of my shutters. How much would that cost? And my brother was like, 400 quid, and that's including paint. And we just took scrap. He was like, oh, come and see me. We did that. He gave us 400 quid, yes. And we were like, 200 quid each. We were like, we could get fucking paid for this shit. Ding, ding. So like, we were like going around to shops going, I see you've got some tags on your shutters. Would you like us to paint your shutters? Do you know what I mean? Like,
we could paint what you want.
And then through doing one of those kind of things, some woman walked up to us and she was like, oh, do you do youth projects? And we were like, no. And she was like, well, can you? And we were like, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
So we ended up doing a youth project. And then off of the back of that, we started doing loads of youth projects in different youth clubs. And me and my brother, we made this booklet of photocopies of,
yeah.
I was doing kind of egg-shaped characters, like showing how to build up a character and how to do that.
So you're doing like workbooks for them?
Yeah, yeah. So they could take home. And we were saying to them, we were teaching kids like how to hold your marker correctly.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just like things that we'd learned ourselves because no one taught us anything. So like me and my brother, we were like, because we started teaching young kids who were like 11, 12, secrets that we'd figured out.
Yeah.
We started like teaching our peers, well, kids that were coming up, we were like, come paint with us, I'll teach you how to do that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I've always been like, people have said to me throughout the years, like, oh, I really would like to learn how to do characters. And I'm like, well, come paint with me.
Yeah.
And we can sit there and I'll teach you how to do it.
Yeah.
And like, I'll teach you how I build up, how I paint.
Yeah. And you can figure your own style. So you get a good response from the commissioned work you're doing on the streets, looking after people's shutters. and you get into this youth work thing, which you're still doing. You've been doing it for years now.
But you know, I think it's really important. I think because of the whole hip hop kind of ideal of teaching is to pass on knowledge and to kind of help people
understand themselves as well. Yeah.
But you know, like through graffiti, I've learned to become a good person.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm a better person than I was.
And you want to keep pushing that out there.
Yeah, of course. It can be a really positive thing. Like I always say to people, I'm like, you can do whatever you want in graffiti.
Yeah.
I was like, if you want to be some bad boy fucking stick up kid, do it. Yeah. Or like if you want to be the best the artist king, that you can be, fucking do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you can choose your path within that culture. And like, when I first started doing graffiti, I couldn't really draw.
Mm.
And I couldn't do graffiti.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I've taught myself how to do it. So if I can do it, then fucking anybody can do it.
I'll tell you what else, man. I think the come up you get through graffiti and then the transferable skills are really wide. I didn't get involved in any other cultures. I was out there as a kid and all that type of shit. Graffiti kind of took me away from it all. But everything that I did in graffiti...
gave me direction.
Everything I've done in graffiti has enabled my whole life.
I remember watching an interview with you years ago, the Juices movie.
Oh, yeah. Alter Ego is an amazing video.
And he was just like, you know, you went, oh, man, I was like, I don't know how old you were, 17 or something? And you were like, my girlfriend's pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, and you went, oh, and I realized I painted fucking Hulk cars. If I can do that, then I can definitely bring up a child.
Yeah. I was 20, so that video, I was just 20 when I was born, and that video, I think Tylo done that in 2004. And yeah, it was only afterwards I actually reflected. I don't think I realised at the time, being a young dad, and I was 20, so I'm in the mix, I'm a teenager, it's nothing, I'm a dickhead. I don't understand anything. It was later on in life when, you know, Josh, 3-4 years old, and I'm thinking, hang on, I think I've done this. Because also I'd started the gallery, And I knew where the gallery came from. And I think it also made me realise, oh, you managed to do, because I didn't have a dad. I had no father figure in my life. I didn't know who my dad was. And so having a child and decided to be in its life, and then the decisions I made, I'm sure graffiti is what gave me the strength, because the shit I went through before graffiti didn't give me any strength at all, apart from pure nightmares and horror. And graffiti showed me the things I was capable of. And I think I must have put the same formula to having a child.
Yeah.
And he's now 18 this year.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, in my darkest moments of my life, like, and I've had a lot, like, when I'm painting, that's all I'm thinking about.
Man.
Do you know what I mean? And somebody said, I've met this B-boy in Wales 2 years ago, and he was telling me a story about him. He's one of these kind of musicians that can pick up any instrument and play anything. So he was in Africa doing this music thing.
Yeah.
And he said that he was in this tiny little town where no one had shit. And he said this guy sat down with all of these types of drums that they had a name. I can't remember what it was, but he was like, he was sitting there and people started gathering around because he started playing the drums, and he was looking at everybody and people weren't really that interested, but they were sitting there watching him. And he said that when he went into the zone where, you know, when you look at DJs and they got dumb look on their face of like, or like guitarists or when people
they're
are doing
in,
art,
they're in the zone.
He said that they were going up to them and, people were going up to him, putting their thumb on his forehead and going like that, which like kind of flicking their hand, which means well done there.
Yeah.
And he was just playing the drums, and he said people had no money, but then they started pulling out notes and pulling out coins and giving him money. And he said it to me, he was like, you know, that's what that was where he's the most beautiful that he could be, because his ego's completely gone and he was in that zone. And
you get that
when you're painting and you're in that zone, that's all you.
So let's quickly talk about painting, because fucking hell, Ed, no one paints more than you. There can't be a graffiti writer in this country, and I'm sure we could probably look and search around quite a lot of the world. Have you painted today? You've done tags today?
Yeah, I've done tags today.
You came to the studio, you had ink on your hands.
Sorry.
It really is a full-on daily occurrence. And you don't just tag every day. You paint pieces, you put your heart into it an awful lot.
Yeah.
You did a high road last week. What high road did you do last week?
Streatham. Yeah. No, but like the... It's really funny because, like, a lot of young dudes, they're like, oh, yeah, you're a legal beagle, yeah. But a lot of my street shit is illegal.
Yeah.
I just rock up and I start painting and people are like, oh, that's great. Yeah. I'm like, yeah,
I'm
going to
keep painting.
You're like, what?
Yeah. You burn fucking walls down, man. Have you had a count for any of the recent years? Like, for 1 year?
Well, I mean, I had a long-term relationship with a woman for about 8.5 years, and she turned around to me and she was like, "Yeah, I'm sick of your, I'm tired of your ass," and she like left me, and I was just like, "Holy shit!" And basically, she was like, "I don't want you to be at the house when I move my shit out." So I like went and got drunk and came home at like 1 o'clock in the morning. Woke up the next morning, I went into the living room and like half of the shit had gone.
Yeah.
And I sat down on my couch in my pants and I was like, I've got to pay twice the amount of rent.
That was.
And I've got to pay all of the bills by myself. And a week ago, I just quit my job.
Oh, shit.
And I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? And I was like, right, I could sit here and cry or I could just go out and paint. Yeah. And so... For that first year, I had 4 days off, and that was Christmas, my birthday, and 2 days where I was hungover. And 'cause
361 days you probably painted for.
Yeah, I mean that was the beginning of it, and then
Well, that's the thing. It hasn't stopped.
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, but it's slowed down. It's not that intense anymore. Yeah. But like, I bugged out, and like, and I knew that I was losing my mind. Man, but you know, what
you
I mean?
Know, it's obviously a sad start to the story.
Oh, no. But it's I got better.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, not that you were shit before, but yes, you inevitably get better. But you know what? I think there's more. Another way to look at it: the butterfly effect from your effort.
Yeah, I mean,
people have been burnt hard by you, and made people go out and have to paint. And I'm not going to say names, but I've got theories. I've got people in my mind who I think paint as hard as they do. I think if we could chronologically lock it down, you'd be the start of the butterfly effect.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a couple of people where I've said to them, I'm like, yo, you paint a lot, it's good. And and they turned around to me and they said that I was the reason for that. Like, because I was through wind, sleet, or snow. Wait,
I was just
bitch,
literally
have
thinking,
my dough, no.
I was like... thinking in my head just now, I was just like, Ed goes through those days as well where none of us can be fucked, but Ed's there.
I've done it where I've been so hungover, I've been like puking whilst painting. Do you know what I mean? Like, where I really should have been in bed, but I knew that if I was in bed, I might have done something bad to myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, like with me painting, it's okay. I'm not dealing with certain issues in my life, but I know that when I'm painting, I like aggressive looking graffiti. So when I'm angry, my graffiti looks like how I want it to look.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, and then
when you're not angry, the piece looks like that as well. It's got
But I know that I can slowly work out my problems because I'm not dealing with it at that moment, but I'm dealing with it through my artwork. And then I can, then when it's too traumatic at that moment, then later on, I can be like, okay, I can deal with it now.
It's nuts what personal, you know, things that we're going through personally. People that don't know you, people that, you know, haven't heard this story, or, you know, they would have thought or perceived a certain thing about you.
Can I just interrupt? It's really, because I had so much fucked up shit when I was a kid, and because I was ignored at school, and because I was constantly getting beaten up and blah, blah, blah. When I've worked with young people, because I've always been honest with everybody I talk to, young people have felt it was okay to tell me really traumatic shit in their lives, and
they felt your honesty.
Yeah, but they were lucky because I went through maybe worse or
equivalent,
the same kind of thing, and I've been able to tell them how I've made myself better by
being creative.
You should never give up.
Well, do you know what I mean?
On anything. No. Do you know what I mean? Like, nothing. I remember Arrow saying to me years ago, he was like, nothing good is easy.
No.
Do you know what I mean? And and when I've said that a lot to young people, when they're like, oh, this is long. And I'm like, yeah, but it's nothing supposed
good,
to be.
Yeah, nothing good is easy, man.
It's supposed to be hard. And the reason why graffiti's cool is because it's fucking hard.
Yeah,
like,
it's hard work.
And it's not like, it doesn't get easier when you paint.
No.
Do you know what I mean? You're like, it's still fucking hard.
Yeah, every piece.
Every piece. And I hate 90% of everything I do. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's why I paint so much because I'm like, that's fucking shit.
I've got to go again.
Like, look at that E. I fucked up on the E. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
that eye's fucking looking after my E. It's not right. Like, but what a fucking journey, man.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stop, obviously. And you work constantly within the culture. You work for the culture, for youth work. And work with various artists and produce work to get paid. And
I just wanted to, I always wanted to be part of hip hop. I mean, I wanted to be part of punk, and then English punk died by 84. So hip hop was the only rebellious music besides reggae that was really teaching me about cultures that I didn't know about. I wasn't taught about black history at school on purpose.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a black neighborhood. And
also,
I'm from the middle of America, and me and my brother are slightly Native American as well. So I started reading a lot of Native American history, and also I started reading a lot of African history because I thought that it was my duty to learn that shit because I'm not being taught it on purpose.
We're not being taught it, man. There's a whole world of education that we're not known about. And I think this is why culture is such an important thing for people to be part of, because you do learn lots, you know. You learn integral amounts.
You learn everything from everybody.
Yeah, and being part of a culture enables that, because we can, you know, there's 38-year-old men out there that haven't got a network of friends the same as someone who's within a culture who's got a network of friends. And then the richness of cultures within the culture.
Yeah, I mean, but that was the exciting thing about skateboarding and graffiti was that people, it didn't matter what you looked like, it was about how good you were at that thing, and that you got props for that. And not even if you were good at it was just you being part of that.
Yeah.
You got props for doing your thing. Do you know what I mean? And it was, that was, you know,
you lived that.
Yeah, I mean, but it was great. You know, like when I was 12 years old, I was hanging out with Nigerian kids or kids from India or
Turkish friends.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, Turkish people. But I mean, London's a melting pot anyway. Mm. But you know, like.
No, but we can still stay in our cubbyholes, man. I know white racists. I grew up in central London. I grew up in Zone 2, and I knew white racists.
But yeah, but my brother was talking about racist B-boys of like loads of kids from outside of London.
Yeah.
They come to London and they get robbed. So then they become racist, but they're hip-hop
they're
heads. And you're like, what? What are you talking about? Like,
but look, hip-hop is, yes.
But funny thing. Like, I only have, like, unfortunately, like graffiti is different from any other type of art where it is a street culture thing. So yeah, there is beefs and stuff like that, and which you don't get in fine art.
Yeah.
You know, fine artists don't go, I don't like how you painted that thing.
It's the same way you don't get rock musicians doing diss tracks.
Yeah. But, you know, in some ways it can help. But most of the time, it's just negative.
No, you know what I mean? You're right. But the thing is, I just think the fact that it's got that part in it, it just shows you another part of real life.
Yeah. People will stand on your head or...
Yeah, and so and you don't have to be negative about it and think, oh, my God. But graffiti, it's just got... I don't know. And I don't always want to just talk about graffiti on this podcast. And I'm hoping to talk to people who aren't just in my culture. But this culture is fucking amazing. And... I've never been a DJ and I've never been a skater. I've never been a B-boy, but I've never known people so well-rounded who've come out of a culture and can talk about so many different things. And we get interested in so many different things. And I don't know. It's just.
Well, you have to use.
I've learned so much.
I mean, like with graffiti, you have to use every type of art that's ever been known to man. So like. So you look at colours. So like I always used to say to young kids, I would be like, they'd be like, oh, I'm not very good at colourways. I'm like, look at women's dresses. I'm like, you look at girls anyway, but
note of those. Yeah,
yeah,
and you got it.
There's crazy colour schemes.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like so, you know, but you could learn about perspective. You learn about character design. You learn about typography. You learn about everything. It's a higher type of art than most other types.
It's going to be interesting looking back in a couple of hundred years, you know, when those people get a chance to look back and see how important and integral this culture was.
Well,
listen, one final thing I want to get to.
Cool. Sorry. I'm just wanging.
You must be as well, within the graffiti culture, the only person you've killed everyone with the celebrity photos. You kill Instagram with the celebrity photos. I bumped into Stephen Fry one day and I took a shot especially for you of me and Stephen Fry. I was like, this is for Ed. But you've met everyone.
It's pretty crazy.
How?
Well, It was actually Aces that started this year. Okay. Because we were walking from Chrome and Black when he was still living in the UK. And he was like, holy shit, look, it's Boris Becker. And I was like, oh, yeah, it is. And he was like, you need to have a photograph with him. And I was like, yo, Boris. And he was like, yeah, what do you want? And I was like, do you think I could take a photo with you? And he was like, yeah, of course. And then I pulled this, like, dumbass face. And we both started laughing. And he just looked at me like, you're a dick.
That photo is amazing.
But then, because I was out all the time, and I'm really good at facial recognition, like, I clock people, and I like...
They're classic, man. Ed, that is a fucking amazing, constant journey. Your spirit, I think you're still 21, man.
Like, well, in my mind, I'm... But everybody thinks that they're 21.
Yeah, well...
Till they die.
You embody the culture. You keep that positivity going. Just keep it going, and you're integral to this scene. So,
thank you, brother.
I'm sure we only got half the story there. In fact, I know we only got half the story. Ed has produced so much work on walls all over the city and many others around the country and the world, actually. I don't know many other graffiti artists who managed to put so much narrative into their paintings either. He paints tires of pieces with characters, like most graffiti writers, but each one has a real story, a real meaning. That must all come from his great imagination and a great crew of friends who push each other constantly, the ID crew. He's always got artwork at group shows, and he's also put on a couple of solo shows himself. He's been a youth worker for probably over a decade now. He's a DJ, which goes really well with his wide variety of music choices. The list goes on. He said he wanted to be part of hip-hop. He is hip-hop, and more. As I said at the start, he's an animal, but definitely one of the best ones. I'm really enjoying these, and I hope you are too. So please get in contact and let me know if there's anyone you think you might want to be on here and have this conversation with me, or yourself maybe. You can get to me on the Instagram at F24podcast. Have a good weekend. Catch you next week. Love your city. Love your culture.